Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, Gabe Yadas and I, we are joined with Savan Matossian. Now, if you don't know who Savan is, well, him and I, we've known each other forever. He used to run, he was a director of media at CrossFit. He also has three boys. He's traveled the world. He's been to over 100 different countries, been all over the United States. He has a wealth of knowledge and a large background in a variety of different things that I think makes his kind of his viewpoints unique. Gabe, we talk about a lot of things on today's episode, huh?
Yeah, I mean, Savan's a guy with some really strong opinions and just delivers them in such an entertaining way that I know people are going to love this episode. Some people might, you know, it might ruffle some feathers, but I think it was a really good conversation. I said this while we were recording that this was my favorite episode, and I've loved so many of the guests we've had on, so many of the episodes, but I think I'll reiterate that and say that this was a really special episode because we got to talk about home births, which is a cool thing that like I haven't shared a lot about, but me and Ariel have had a home birth with our first son. We're going to have hopefully an uneventful home birth with our daughter that's coming here in a few weeks. So that was just super special to have that conversation with him. But the way he talks about it is definitely unique. He has some strong opinions, but man, I appreciate the guy and I'm glad he was on.
Well, it's definitely an entertaining episode. We don't talk too much about fitness. We talk a lot about life, a lot about having kids. And Gabe, we do talk about the childbirth. You know, I had a different background. I have a different perspective on it. And that's okay. You know, that's what these conversations need to be about. Is like we can't all agree and be super strong opinionated on everything. We might have some cornerstone that we're all trying to level up as husbands, as fathers, and that's what grounds us. But then you got to find what works for you and your relationships and your family. And I think that's ultimately what I got out of today's episode. So really appreciate, you know, Savan jumping on the podcast. Appreciate you, Gabe. I hope everybody listening has been training hard. If you have not checked out, you know, our previous episodes, make sure to go back. There's a lot of other guests, a lot of other episodes. If you haven't left us a rating or review, definitely helps out the podcast. We'd really appreciate if you could do that for us. Without any further ado, Gabe, let's jump in to an incredible episode with Savan. Boom, we're live. See, Savan, you always start off like that.
Bam, we're live.
Ah, bam. Damn it. I totally dropped the ball on that. So mine wasn't as exciting as yours. Yours is bam.
One vowel, not two vowels, not am.
Dude, we were starting to talk about some home birthing stuff. So before we started, I just wanted to start recording. But before we get into all kinds of stuff with you, thanks for being on the show. We've known each other for many, many years. I have to ask, and this can be a little plug for you.
Yes.
And how's the toothpaste going? How is the powdered toothpaste going? I have to ask. Like, dude, when you told me you were starting like a toothpaste company, I was like, out of all things I ever thought Savan was going to do, it wasn't going to be powdered toothpaste. So how's that going?
So there's this chemical out there. I don't know if chemical is the right word, but there's something out there called fluoride. And if you put it on your teeth, it will strengthen the enamel of your teeth. It's everyone agrees unanimously, enamel will strengthen your teeth. Also, unanimously, everyone agrees that fluoride is a neurotoxin and that if kids consume fluoride, it will across the board reduce their IQ by 3 to 6 points and you won't get it back. There's three major studies on it. I think one was in Europe, one was in China, and one was in the United States. And it's like, it's known. But what's crazier is when you look at the origins of fluoride, it was basically a byproduct, I want to say, of something having to do with the creation of steel and making steel in these steel plants. And they were putting it into rivers and streams and it was decimating everything there and killing everything. So they're like, shit, we can't put it in the rivers and streams anymore. What should we do with it? So they started basically a propaganda campaign to say, hey, it strengthens the enamel on your teeth and we're going to put it in toothpaste. And so there it was. And on one show, I was talking about that. And then I had a guest on, Tyson Bagent, the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. And he said, hey, I was listening to your podcast. And what's the deal with fluoride? Should I quit using it? And I was like, fuck, I don't even remember. I couldn't remember. So after I got off that show, because he caught me off guard, I for like 3 days, all I did was like study fluoride. So the next time he came on, I could tell him. And at that time, I remembered for the last 2 years, my mom and sister have been telling me, hey, you should be brushing your teeth with baking soda and that's it. And my mom and my sister have crazy white teeth. Not like Fox News CNN blue where it's white, where it's like blue. They just have normal like bone white teeth. So I'm like, okay. So I realized fluoride, no one should be putting fluoride in their mouth. And then they were using powder to brush their teeth. And I'm like, this is kind of weird. And then I used powder one time and I'm like, holy shit, powder is the way. So I called our friend, our mutual friend, Dale King over at Doc Spartan. And I said, hey, dude, can you put eggshells, bentonite clay, charcoal, baking soda, all mix it together and sell it a tooth powder so that I can start using it? So he sends me some samples. I ask him who his suppliers are. I say, can you switch suppliers? I don't like this supplier. I don't like this. I said, can you not put it in plastic containers? All that stuff. So we went back and forth. We did taste tests, the whole thing. And then all of a sudden it was ready to go. And he had the jar and everything. I said, cool, run with it. And he goes, no, it's yours. I'm like, no, dude, it's yours. You all promote the shit out of it. You run with it. And he goes, no, it's yours. And then someone in my comments from my podcast goes, hey, call it Matuthian. So then Dale sent me a one page write up to me and Susan is like, hey, dude, here's our deal. And we've sold thousands already.
Dude.
He says they can't keep it in stock.
We got to try it. We got to try it.
Dude, every day I get a DM every day saying, holy shit, you've changed my life. The tooth powder is all, I mean, you'll never, once you use tooth powder, you'll never go back to paste again. Your teeth actually feel clean. It's not like this minty flavor in your mouth. It's like, oh, my teeth feel clean. My teeth are, and then over time, your teeth are whiter and they don't have that chemically white look. And you're just like, okay, I'll never go back. All my kids, I never even ask my kids to use it. They just use it because they see me using it. Right. So you just get your toothbrush wet, bang it off, Gabe, on the sink, and then just put a tiniest little bristle in and then brush.
We're going to use it. I've tried charcoal one time and it was kind of awkward.
I didn't like charcoal either.
All right. I'm getting it. Gabe, I'm going to order some for you and me.
Yeah.
Liz too.
You're going to be
It's already in my cart. Dude, I'm over here real time.
Dude, so Savon,
there's two lessons there, right? Yeah. Follow your passion. And like, I wasn't trying to protect it at all. Just work with fucking good people too. But it's a product I can get behind. It's like I have this sponsor, Born Primitive, and they sell this shoe called the Savage One. And I'm like fucking in love with the shoe. It's the Nano 2, but with the thinner sole. And I love the Nano 2 also. I don't know if I would have made a thinner sole, but it's like, I just want to work with, I want it to be easy. Someone recently offered me a huge amount of money to be a podcast sponsor. And you could be a sponsor on my iTunes or my Spotify where I don't have to deal with your shit. But if you want to be a sponsor of my show, I have to be able to just like sit like it yeah, has to just,
it.
Yeah, I have to, it has to just roll off my tongue. Like, hey, yeah. And I love what Born Primitive stands for. So I'm just stoked. It just keeps, things are just happening well, like in that regard. Just stay true to who you are and the things keep rolling in.
It has to be authentic, man. It has to be authentic. I'm excited to get this powder in now.
You're going to be stoked. You're going to be stoked.
Savon, you started like a vicious. So here's Gabe's like a vice, I guess if you call it. We'll be on a podcast. We'll be talking to somebody and he'll already have. So we were talking to Thomas DeLauer. Do you know, Thomas
yeah.
DeLauer?
Great guy. Yep.
This guy had green tea, all these different herbal, whatever, already in his Amazon cart before the podcast was even over. I got to remind Gabe.
Well, yeah, I got to try it for myself, man. No. And whenever we have someone on the podcast, someone that like I'm looking forward to talking to, believe in what they have to say. Usually we're in line about a bunch of stuff. So like, dude, if Savon made a toothpaste, I'm going to try this damn toothpaste.
DeLauer's in an interesting spot. Crazy successful, made a shitload of money off of YouTube, lives on telling the truth, but he got YouTube eyes on him.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's got a lot of YouTube eyes on him.
Yeah. And unfortunately or fortunately, he knows stuff he can't even share. And so he's an interesting guy. I really, really like him. All of us in the space probably have information we can't share. It's not like crazy information. It's like, hey, it's very close to, hey, meat's better than vegetables. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Careful. Yeah. One step further and you're toast. I mean, it's weird.
So I was with him on Saturday and then we were with him like a week or two ago. And it's tough because you start asking these questions. This is something I actually want to ask you. You start asking these questions like, what have you changed your mind on the last couple of years? And especially if you're like a YouTube guy who's looking at the science, looking at the data, man, at this point, there's so much on both sides of almost everything. It's hard to decipher what is accurate, what isn't accurate. And you're putting out these bold claims, right? Not just him, I'm talking about in general, but there's just so much information. It's so hard to cut through the bullshit, but that's what we were talking to him about. And so I do have a question for you. You know, your boys now, how old are your kids?
One, just to answer that real quick, I was talking to Greg the other day about China And he said, dude, I can't give you an honest answer about that. And I said, why? He said, because I'm so biased. I'm so against China as a nation and what they've done. So my thoughts, my position is clouded. So that's a good first step. Once you do, like, at least be aware when you are being biased to just be honest about it. Right. So anyway, my kids are seven. I have two boys who are twins who are 7 and 7. And then their older brother is 9. They're almost exactly 2 years apart. So three little boys.
And Savan, just to really quick, just to add to what you were saying too, one of the things that I appreciate about Thomas and a bunch of the other people that I like tend to trust, because I agree with Jason, right? Like, you can find someone that says this side of everything and someone that says this side of everything. Everyone can cite a study. Everyone can make a compelling case for it. But one of the things that Thomas says is strong beliefs loosely held. And whenever I find someone that has changed their mind about things and is open to saying like, hey, like, I thought this was really big, keto, intermittent fasting, but I've changed my tune because of reason X, Y, and Z, like, immediate green flag of like, this is someone that I can trust because I know that they're putting out the best information with the information that they have at the time, but they're also willing to change their mind if, you know, the information calls for it. And I think that that's a big thing. I think once you have someone that digs their heels harder and harder, despite, you know, evidence to the contrary, that to me is a big red flag. So I appreciate that about Thomas and about anyone else that I tend to really look up to, especially in this like health nutrition space.
And things have to be put in context too. I'll just choose something like crazy, like 9/11. There's the mainstream media narrative that it was done by the Saudis and it was organized by Osama bin Laden and the buildings went down. And then there's a theory that it was done by the U.S. government or the FBI or the buildings were blown up. But whatever side you're on, put it in context. We all agree on one thing. Someone did it. They didn't just, the wind didn't blow and it fell down. It wasn't an act of God. So you have to put it also in context so you can kind of calm down. And it's not like, hey, we agree that something happened and there is a story where some humans got together and organized a takedown. And I feel like a lot of people miss that because they get so far off on like the what would be called conspiracy. But like, hey, we do have a common ground. And our common ground is we can agree that those buildings were taken down. And so it was done nefariously. And the vast majority of us of Americans don't wish that they wouldn't have been taken down. And a lot of people died. I mean, that we do have a common ground. And then the second thing is like, I'll go to the Liver King thing. We have to live by the golden rule. We have to treat people like we want to be treated. So on some level, like, you can't just be like, fuck this dude, he lied about being on steroids. You gotta be like, and I like that about Thomas too, because I saw the way he treated Liver King too. That's what made me think of that. It's like, hey, he's just a fucking person. Like, you're running with this narrative like, hey, he just wants to make money and he lied and he this and he that. Hey, dude, on some level, he's just a fucking little insecure man like the rest of us trying to find his way in this world. And like, you just can't be out there just he didn't hurt any of our kids, you know what I mean? He didn't molest anyone. He's not a monster. And so he's not selling us fluoride,
right? Yeah. I
he's not selling
neurotoxin
to our kids. And so I just there's a place we'll all get the karma if we fucking get crazy. We'll all on some level get the karma, and you don't want that.
Dude, Savan, I was telling Gabe, I met Liver King for the first time at SHOT Show, and he was like the most gracious, kindest, like super cool to me. And
that's what Hiller said too. Hiller went to his house and said he's nice as shit, cool as shit.
Dude, he was super cool. Hey, did you listen to the Robert Kennedy podcast with Joe Rogan by any chance?
No, I heard it's great.
So he definitely talks about American history for pretty much 80% of it. He talks about his presidential run for like maybe 20 minutes tops. But at the end, he gets off the show, and this is what brought me to this point. And Jocko's with Echo, who's like his co-host. And Jocko was saying like, hey, in the military, before we would take on a target, our goal as a unit would always be to look at it through as many perspectives and lenses as we possibly could. Because when we went on the target, if we only looked at it from this vantage point, maybe we would get, you know, hit by this vantage point, whatever. And he says that's the way, like, I try and look at business situations from all these different lenses. And so it got me thinking about when you're looking at different people and putting out information and whatnot, just look at it through different vantage points, different perspectives. I think it's a helpful tool. And that's what Jocko was talking about. That was good.
The P. Diddy thing's another thing like that. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Gabe.
No, I was just going to say small correction because you said the Joe Rogan podcast. You meant the Jocko episode.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant.
Oh,
sorry.
Good. Say Joe Rogan? Oh, yeah, good. Jocko. I was like, oh, so I was picturing, okay, so Jocko and Echo were there when he did the Joe Rogan.
That's my Jocko. So that's what I meant. Sorry, the Jocko podcast.
Which, by the way, brings a complete random thing. Did you see that lady who was interviewing about the interview, Dana White, and starts the interview and thought it was Joe Rogan? That has to be like the most ridiculous thing.
That had to been fake, right?
No, but listen, guys. Okay, judgment free zone, safe space. 10 years ago, and I met Dana like 15 years ago, and got to hang out with him for like 15 minutes alone at it was either the Mr. Universe or the Arnold, and his booth and the arm wrestling booth I was at were across, and the place was empty. So we just were
pulling John.
Yes, so we just hung out and talked for like 15 minutes. He was a great guy, but I used to get Dana White and Joe Rogan confused too 10 or 15 years ago. Hey, and you know what's crazy?
More acceptable.
that chick's I think Sage Steele or something. She's an amazing chick, and she got fired for ESPN for something I can't remember, like she wouldn't take the vaccine or something. I can't remember, but I've seen her in the last couple months sitting behind Dana White hanging out with, you know, Kid Rock and Trump and those people in the background there. So it's like she has an intimate relationship with him too. But anyway, interesting.
Oh man.
Maybe I also liked how Dana walked out of Howie Mandel's.
Oh. Well, he said he was never going to do a podcast again. Then he was on a podcast like the following week. I don't know if dude, he's just done like yeah.
My theory. So Howie's crazy. He's like off the deep end, quadruple boosted, that won't shake anyone's hand. Him and his wife are off their rocker, right? They're just living in the Los Angeles hive of fear. And when Dana went on there, Howie's just pouring compliments at him. Oh, and Howie's wife has made it, if you look at her social media, she's made it her mission to just destroy Trump. And so Dana's friends with Trump. So I think Dana went on there, and I think he was just showering Dana with compliments. And I think Dana was like, fuck you. That's, I mean, I have no premise for that, but I get the fact that he's a very real, authentic guy, and he heard all that, and he's like, this guy's going to be a fucking pandering bitch later. That's the way I took it. Because he's like you said, he's been on 20 podcasts. He's on everyone's podcast.
Everybody's podcast. Because he just walked out. I think what it was like he didn't want to be on a fluff. He didn't want to get fluffed up, right? He just wanted to have a good conversation.
Yes.
Speaking of good conversation, I got to ask you about your boys.
So, yes, tell me, ask me.
So, you know, dude, it was so funny. I was just re-listening.
They're everything to me, Jason. It's all I do. My boys.
Your kids are important to you?
It's very. Like, I'm raising my fucking kids.
Hey, it's your, I was listening to Chris Williamson. You were on Chris Williamson, I don't know, in 2020. So, like, almost
November
4 years ago.
2020, yeah.
Yeah. And, dude,
Zach Thielander's housemate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so I was listening to it, and you brought this idea of like your Sistine Chapel, and you had a lot of like one-liners I thought were really good in that podcast. If people haven't listened to this, you go check out Chris Williamson and Savon. But in regards to the boys, you, for a while, at least that I saw, they were doing a lot of like acrobatic type stuff, a lot of like gymnastics types, a lot of like freestyle parkour, a lot of like going to the skate park. Like I would talk to you on the phone and you'd be at the skate park with them. Are the boys still interested in those type of extreme sports, for lack of a better term, like not extreme, but like auxiliary sports like skateboarding? I used to BMX race. Or have you gotten them more exposed like traditional sports at this age? I'm just curious, like how have things evolved there?
So the only thing that's changed really, I mean, obviously they're evolving, but the only thing that's changed is because of the podcast, I don't have time to share it with the world. So some people, like my buddy Andrew Hiller, is like, hey, dude, you're fucking up. You should have gone with the kid thing. But I've pivoted to this podcast thing. So I wake up every morning at 6. At 7, I go live every morning on the Sevan podcast. I get off at 8:30 or 9 or 10. And then I'm with my kids until about 7. That's like, and then at 7, I'm usually up till like 11. I'm working on the podcast again. Either I do another podcast or I'm preparing for the next morning. And that's my day every day. Pretty close, but it used to be that I was always filming them and then I would come home and edit at night. And so I just don't do that anymore. And so that's the reason why they're not seeing it. But since basically you could say this is a little bit of a gross exaggeration, a little bit of an exaggeration, but not a gross exaggeration. But every day my kids skateboard, fight, meaning they're either doing jiu-jitsu, striking, or kicking, or some fighting, and a tennis. All three, almost every single day, they do all three. And then they supplement it with a pseudo CrossFit, meaning we train a lot in the gym, but we don't actually do, we just train in the gym. We just train, you know what I mean? Like we do a lot of like hand-eye coordination stuff, really light lifting, tons of like pull-ups, handstand walks, bar muscle ups, taking turns on the treadmill. Somewhat like one dude will be on the air runner and the rest of us have balls and we're trying to hit him while he, you know what I mean? And he has to swat him away or just, you know, just crazy shit like that. But the other three, like my kids are bad dudes. Like their jiu-jitsu's fucking nuts. Their striking is like out of control and their kicking. And their tennis is like if I go anywhere with my kids, it's a scene. Someone's going to come up, like just walking around. Like my wife just went, I know this is crazy, but my wife just went to a restaurant the other day. She was at a table eating with some friends and the kids were eating at a table. And the lady goes, hey, the bill came and she goes, hey, I didn't charge for your kids. And my wife's like, oh, how come? And she goes, I've been at this restaurant 10 years. Those are the best kids I've ever seen. And it's like that. And if my kids are playing tennis at the tennis court and someone sees them hitting a ball, people will stop and gather and be like, who the fuck taught your kid that stroke? And we go to jiu-jitsu tournaments and same thing. It's like, holy shit. But jiu-jitsu tournaments is a little harder because there's a lot of bad kids there. There's a lot of bad kids. And by bad, I mean Michael Jackson bad, like good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your and so same with the skate park. You know, they're probably, for their age, they're probably, I don't know. You know, it's rare we go to a skate park where there's a kid better than them. I mean, I can go on Instagram and find kids that are way better than them, but you don't see it at the skate park. And they're just good, disciplined kids. Just crazy good disciplined kids. And that's all they do. Oh, they do school in the morning. While I'm doing the podcast, the kids are doing school with their mom. They do Kumon. And then after that, and then so like on rainy days, I do school with them. So let's say it was raining and we weren't going to the skate park. I just have books I've ordered online off of Amazon and we all sit down together and do the books. So I'm with them. I'm like raising them. They see, you know what I mean? They see if an old lady walking by, I hold the door open for her. They see that when I'm at Home Depot and there's like trash in my cart, I still pick that cart and I take the trash out of it and throw it away. Like I'm saying, there's someone in line me behind at the supermarket with one item and we got a basket. We let that person go. I mean, they're, you know, I'm in the backyard cutting down, doing gardening. They're back there. So I'm just raising my kids. It's so awesome. If you have kids and you can raise your kids, you will never go back the other way. You may think there's not one person who's like, oh, I homeschooled and I regret it. You're just like, I homeschooled because one of my kids went to school for 2 years, kindergarten and first grade. And I thought, and then COVID came and we pulled them out. And I just can't even believe, I was ever going to take that route. I just can't believe it.
Man, the percentage of podcast guests we've had that homeschool gets me so freaking excited.
I feel like it's almost like if you're listening to this podcast and you're like an avid listener, you're probably like, oh, these people are like trying to, and for the record, my kids are not homeschooled, but almost every guest, right, Gabe, is homeschooled.
Yeah, it gets me excited because, I mean, I always don't want to say that we've made decisions that are premature. Our child is 1.5, but we're definitely have talked about, and that's the route that we want to go. And it's funny, Savan. So one of my earliest memories of your content is actually seeing when you were actually filming the kids a bunch in the garage and you had like all the different, like, you know, little monkey bars and the stuff. And I just finished last weekend. We built a 600 square foot like home gym here on our property.
Damn.
where a third of it is going to be for the kids. So like, mm-hmm. We haven't done it yet, but we're going to put like rock climb wall, like, you know, rings hanging from the ceiling. And a lot of that is inspired literally from that video that I saw you do. Cause I remember at that time, you know, we still didn't have kids, but we were definitely always knew we were going to. And I remember I was like, that's what I want to do. Like, that's the time that I want to spend with them. Like, I want them to just like, you know, play and have all these like, you know, things to climb and just fool around. Like, I am so fired up now to be a dad because I also feel like I get to like revisit a lot of the things that I had fun doing as a kid with my boy. And then we're going to have a girl here in the coming months. But dude, I can't wait to build out my space, and I'm going to reach out to you for some recommendations on what we should get.
If you are going to raise your kid has to be that border collie that everyone sees in the guy's Jeep. You know, the guy who has the Jeep and the border collie in it, and he pulls up and he runs into the store and his dog jumps out and sits at the door and other dogs walk by and it doesn't give a shit. And then he comes out and it greets him and then it jumps back in the car. If you don't have a perfect fucking behaved kid, you will not succeed. You have to raise your kid like that dog that everyone's like, fuck, I wish I had that dog. The dog that just has to be so well behaved, because then when your kid's well behaved, you'll take them everywhere. Like people will be like, I'm going grocery shopping. I'll tell my wife, I'm going grocery shopping. I'm bringing the kids. She's like, you don't have to, but that's the fun part, because they're so, you push the cart, you follow me, you make sure, you know what I mean? I don't even care about the grocery shopping. I'm doing it with my kids. And, but if you don't make really strict boundaries, you will not be able to pull it off. And maybe you'll fuck it up and make your kid worse. But by strict boundaries, and you have to just set little wins. Like, I'll tell you a couple of mine. My kids are never allowed to touch my cell phone. Dude, I would never even ask them to bring me the cell phone. They're never allowed to touch my car keys. They're never allowed to put their hands on the wall in the house.
Still the case, Savon? Like, I heard you say that, like, so years ago you said
my kids have eaten at McDonald's. I can't claim. I saw Matt Boudreaux's thing. My kids have never had fast food. I was like, you motherfucker.
No way.
But my kids have had fast food. But no, there are they're never allowed to touch. And here's the thing: my wife does let them touch their cell phone, and they are allowed to touch my mom lets them touch their cell phone. But my rules are my rules. So when I'm in the room, it's my rules. When I'm alone with them, it's my rules. And it's just, and I used to fight with those other people, but I learned quickly, hey, dude, it doesn't matter what they do. And my kids feel so safe. They love being with me because they know these are the rules. You're free. Go buck wild inside of those rules. Do whatever the fuck you want. You know what I mean?
So you kind of started answering my question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because I want you to expand on it. A lot of people would hear that and say, doesn't that make them then like gravitate towards the people that gives them all the freedom, right? Like, there's that stereotype.
No,
that,
kids, you know, want to feel safe.
So talk to me about that a little bit more, right? Because a lot of it out there is, you know, if grandparents let them like run wild, or if mom lets them run wild and you're the disciplined one, then she's the fun one. I want to spend time with mom. Like, mom lets me do A, B, and C. If dad is super strict over here, like, that's not what I want. That makes you like the strict, like, you know, not so fun parent. Why is it that rules are actually so important for them to feel safe?
I'm not wasting their time, and they know that. So you'll go somewhere where, like, the places I go every day, I see the same parents and the same kids. So I'll see a parent sitting there and we're watching all the kids do jiu-jitsu, and I see the same parent once a week fighting over like how much time the kid's going to have on the iPad. And so now they've just used 15 minutes of their life fighting over who's going to, about what they can and can't do on the iPad. My kids know that they never have to do that. We never have that conflict, because the rule is the rule is the rule, and they're free. They know that they could be using crayons, or they could go outside and be on the monkey bars, or at tennis they can do, you know, when it's not their turn, they can be going and playing. But we're never going to get into a conflict of, hey, can I have ice cream right now at tennis? We would not, like, I'll give you an example. I used to take them swimming 5 days a week, and in the swimming area, there was an ice cream machine. And, it's not that I was opposed to ever giving my kids ice cream. They're allowed to have some ice cream if you go to a birthday party or someone's birthday or something like that. But I was never going to give them ice cream from the ice cream machine at the swim center. Why? Because I have to walk by that thing 5 days a week. And if I ever break that boundary, every time we walk by it, they're going to ask. My kids would just run by it laughing and giggling and whipping each other with towels and being kids, instead of like, dad, can we have ice cream? It's just not a fucking option, but they're free to do all the other shit. You know what I mean? And so there's so little conflict between us. So I'll give you another example. I have 100 fruit trees in my backyard. If I ever saw someone throwing fruit, that's just straight to the garage and 100 burpees. We don't throw fruit from the tree. Like, you don't get to pick guavas and start a guava fight. You want to throw stuff at each other, throw rocks at each other. You know what I mean? We don't waste fruit. We don't pick fruit off the fruit tree and throw fruit. And so it's just these basic rules and thinking and just setting boundaries. But for some reason, we all as human beings just want to be safe and know the rules, and then we're free. And it's not, I'm not saying that those conflicts never get break, or they never happen. But every time you let those happen, what happens is you go into a hostage scenario. And the hostage scenario is this: they ask you for something and you start bracing for impact, because when you say no, a temper tantrum's coming. And as a parent, you have to just like look right past that, and you have to always say no, always say no. I would say 99% of the time when I say no, my kids don't have temper tantrum. And what's crazy is, but I bet you 98% of those times I'm still bracing for it. I still can't believe how well behaved they are. It's nuts. But I did it. I never let them win the hostage negotiation. Or not never, but very little. And you can see the places you fucked up, right? You can see the place like you cracked. Like, you know what I mean? That one time you did drive by Baskin Robbins and took them. And now every time you drive that route, yo, I mean, like, they know. And so, and they're trying to get what they want. And you're also, but your job is just to make it so that they're free within those boundaries. But another important thing along that thing though, is you can't control the grandparents, and you can't control your wife. And you can hopefully get on the same team, but if you don't focus on them and just focus on your relationship with your kids, it'll work. I went into a Starbucks one time with Avi. This is before I had the twins. And I told him not to touch anything in the case, and he touched something. And I was in line, and I wanted a cup of coffee so bad, right? And I'm like, oh, we're done. We're out. We left. We got in the car. He cried. I'm like, dude, I'm bummed too. I told you not to touch it. You touch it. Never touched it again. And when I had the twins and they started getting old enough, he's like, dude, don't ever touch anything.
Don't touch the case. Don't touch the case.
Yeah. Because it fucks both. It fucks everyone. Now you don't get something. I don't get something. Like, we're out. You're just not allowed to touch anything in the case. And so to this day, they know that, like, they say, hey, can I have that in the case? Or I'll walk in there and I'll be like, okay, everyone can get a milk, and they'll go in and grab it. But they're not like, here's why I do it. I fucking hate you and your kids when I see your kids touching everything in the case. So you know what I mean? Like, if you walk, you know what I'm talking about? Those kids who are just fucking touching everything, pulling shit. You're like, dude, that's not how civilization works.
All right, taking a break from the podcast to talk to you about the Train Hard app. If you're listening to this episode, it means you care about training, protecting, and providing, which means that you care about your health, your fitness, and becoming the most capable human being you can, just like me and Jason. Me and Jason use the Train Hard app for our training because there are three programs and it has something regardless of the season in your life you're in. If you have the time and energy and you're trying to be the fittest, strongest human being you can, we have 4 strength and conditioning 5 days a week. If life is super busy right now and you need something that's just keeping your momentum from getting to zero, 20, 30 minutes max in the gym, in and out, it has a dumbbell version. If you don't have access to a bunch of equipment, we have the EMOM program. And if you're just trying to be the most jacked dad in the room, work on your body composition, we have the Flex program, which is exactly how I train and the program that I write. So if you haven't already, check the link in the podcast show notes, download the Train Hard app, train hard, but let's get back to the show.
I got to ask, so, you know, you and your wife, you guys have known each other forever, right? I mean, how
forever?
Long? Yeah.
I met her, I was in college and I was probably 23. I'm 52 now. And some girl came over who liked my buddy, and a girl liked my roommate, and she brought a friend to the house. And so I saw her and I'm like, hey, you want to drink some wine? She's like, no, get away from me, weirdo. And it was on. And I spent the next 5 years courting her. It was crazy.
You know, I was listening again back to Chris Williamson, and I think you and I, we probably met close to 20 years ago. I was thinking about it. And
yeah.
And then 08. So, okay, maybe not 20. That was an exaggeration. 16 Close. Years ago, yep. We met. And this is obviously before you had kids. And at the time you had talked about, and I heard you talk about this, like you didn't see yourself. Maybe this wasn't 08, maybe this was before that, having kids and whatnot, or even potentially even getting married. And then it shifted. And what I'm curious about is, like, you probably more than almost anybody I know have really unique life experiences. Probably, I'd say highly, probably one of the most unique people I know, from being homeless and all the stuff that I've learned about you in the past, from living in different places to going to 100 different countries to go film. Like, dude, you've just had a lot of life experiences. So I'm curious how much that played into your role as a parent and the way you do things. Cause the way you're doing it now is a little bit, I don't want to use the word unconventional, because it's kind of like, what is unconventional versus not whatever, but I'm wondering how much your travel has played an impact on the way that you birthed your kids, raised your kids, got married, all of the things, you know?
Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. I haven't really reflected on it in that context, but my wife and I definitely did not want to have kids, and definitely did not want to get married. We were 100% certain. And at 39, we were living with Greg Glassman and Maggie, his current wife, just gave birth to their first child. And my wife saw her breastfeeding. And she's like, hey, I'm very curious what that's about. Like, I would like to experience that. And then another friend said, hey, if you don't have kids, you might regret it. If you do have kids, you won't regret it. If you don't have kids, you might regret it. If you do have kids, you won't regret it. And so I like was looking up and I did the math and I'm like, okay, that equation means you have to have kids. And that, so my wife's like, and by then I was, I think I was 43 and she was 39, and we were really frugal. And when I had a great job, and we were well established. We had a house that was paid for, and we owned another house, right? Something like that. And like life was just, I was cruising. Life was easy. I mean, I worked hard, but life was easy. So she got pregnant and she had the kid, and we started going to a birthing class, and the birthing class was 3 hours one day a week. And I thought it was so fucking cheesy, and like just all the whispering, the affirmations, and they made you dance and like you touched them and rubbed each other and all that. And then all of a sudden one day, but I was enjoying the time with my wife. That was really cool, because it was just 3 hours, the two of us, and with the rest of the world gone. But then this lady walks up to us, the teacher, and she goes, hey, you guys don't want a hospital birth. I'm like, yeah, we do. And she's like, no, you don't. And I'm like, why do you say that? She's like, I'm listening to you guys every time you contribute in class, and you don't want a hospital birth. And I'm like, but we do. We want the safest birth there is. And she's like, hey, I'm telling you, the way you're saying things and what you want to do, you want a home birth. So then we were at one of the visits with my wife, with her OGBYN, and there were two things that happened there. One, I said, one of the things we learned in the home birthing class is that if your wife writes out a birthing plan, right? And let's say part of your wife's birthing plan is that she doesn't want to take drugs. So when she says, fuck, I need the drugs, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to make space for her and give her a window of time to let that thought pass. So you would say to everyone in the room at the hospital, can I get some alone time with my wife? And I'll be out with you in 2 minutes. And then they leave. So I heard that and I'm like, okay. There's a plan like that. And then so I told the OGBYN that when we were in a meeting with her, I was like, hey, if she's not going to want to take drugs. And she's like, well, we're already going to have the pick in her. If she wants drugs, she can get to take the drugs, or something like that. She did something to press back there. And I'm like, but I thought you said this was a partnership. She's like, well, some things aren't negotiable. And then I said, hey, are you going to be at the birth? And she goes, what do you think? I work 24/7. I'm like, all right. Like, I don't even want to be treated like that. If I'm stupid, I'm stupid, but I don't want to be treated like that. So we went down the home birthing route, and we got a doula and a midwife, and we researched it, and they said, hey, there's nothing safer than a home birth. We're going to be more precautionary than anyone you could ever imagine, because if something starts to get weird at the home birth, we're going to take you to the hospital. And we had a home birth. Did you ask how we ended up with a home birth, or how that?
He's sitting there chopping at the bit right now.
One more quick thing, Gabe. So I had spent a lot of time in Africa, and I had spent a bunch of time in Uganda and in Kenya and around the border there. And when we had twins, you're not allowed to have twins at home in the state of California. It's against the law.
Because it's considered a high risk, right?
I mean, abortion's high risk.
Oh boy.
But that's the reason
abortion's really high risk. Some bad shit happens. I don't know what the reason is, but that's probably something they say, some shit like that. And sure. So, and just like they say, babies can't be born breech or any of that shit. Like, so we had a Ugandan lady who was one of our doulas for the twins birth. And she said she had birthed like fucking 50 twins while she was in Africa. And it was, once you home birth, you realize you're not the brave people. You realize that the people in the hospital were the brave people, because your shit's easy. Baby comes out and fucking everyone leaves and you're just, your wife's in bed just getting milked. Those people got to have people pricking their feet, coming in and talking to them. It's loud. There's lights. They're not in their own bed. They got to get in a car. They got to put their baby in a baby seat that's made of plastic. Like, I saw my baby and I'm like, nothing can touch this kid except me and my wife. You know what I mean? Like, no art. I didn't want any artificial shit. It's just perfect and pristine. Baby seats are off gassy and you start looking into all this shit because you want to protect your fucking kid. Those sheets are washed in Clorox. Like, you don't know all their first smells, their brains being developed. Like, fuck all that. You're just like,
so I know Gabe is going to be fired up right now. For the record, both of my children were born in a hospital, and it was definitely Ashley's preference to be doing that.
And the woman should decide. The man should keep his fucking mouth shut. Like I was like, and when my wife decided, I was scared, but.
And, but I definitely want to dive in here. I just wanted to, for the, you know, Ashley had a, you know, there, she had to go through an emergency C-section. So I think it was good that we were there, but Gabe, go ahead. I know you got stuff on this.
No, but the,
Gabe, so, no vaccines, nothing.
No. So the reason
my kids
reason
are just dirt so twirlers, excited. Barefoot dirt twirlers.
Dude, I call him a feral farm child.
Yes.
But the reason that I was so excited to have this conversation, so twofold, as I was listening to you talking about it and listening to you talk about it again, like, I had such a similar experience in that, like, my wife signed us up for this birth class. It was 3 hours on Friday nights,
six to nine.
And I was like, I'm trying to be as supportive as possible. So obviously I'm going to go, we're going to go together, all good. And it's funny, 'cause like by class two, like, I was like so immersed in just all the different things that I had previously believed, that just like when someone explains it to you, like you were talking about the quote unquote things that make it, you know, high risk. Like when they explained to me the fact that, like, hey, if they notice that the umbilical cord might be wrapped around the neck, that's like, you know, dangerous and you might have to have an emergency C-section. And then the lady who
two of my kids were born with umbilical cord around their neck. Yeah.
Right. 'Cause then they explained it, like, they're not breathing when they're in there. They're getting all their oxygen from the umbilical cord. So it shouldn't matter if there's something around their neck. Like, they don't need to breathe yet. Like, this, the fact that was just an example that I remember, and all of these different things that were like, you know, in the hospital, they'll tell you this and that you have to do this. They'll tell you this and you have to do this. And then just spending the 6-7 weeks going through all those scenarios and why, you know, not saying that it's completely wrong, but a lot of it is like overstated. A lot of it is just kind of like, you know, just a little, like, you just start thinking about it and they give you this explanation and you're like, wait, you're right. That doesn't make any sense.
My second twin, Gabe, was born not breathing. He came out with his hand on his head like this out of the vagina, and he was unconscious, and he was as gray as like the back of this phone, right? And I'm holding the firstborn and I start crying, and my wife's looking at me, and she's like in the hallway. She was just on all fours and gave birth in the hallway, and I'm holding the first baby, and she's like, why are you crying? And the midwife's holding my baby, and it's tiny. It's a 6-pound baby, and it's so limp that its hands are touching in the back. Like, it looked like a shitty dead baby, Halloween baby, like you buy at Kmart, like to throw on your yard, you know, for Halloween or something. And I'm crying, and my wife's like, why are you crying? And the midwife's like, I'm just happy, just lying to my wife. And I'm already like, wow, one of my babies is born dead. It was like so obvious. They put the baby on my wife's back. They get this fucking thing. It looks like a turkey baster with like a plastic beer cup. And they put it over the kid's face and they pump it. And I can see the midwives look like they're scared. And all of a sudden I hear a sound and the fucking baby comes to life. And I thought the whole thing looked 20 minutes, but when I looked at the journal, it was 90 seconds from when the baby was born to where they resuscitated it to where it was breastfeeding. 90 seconds. And I know that if that would have happened in the hospital, they'd have taken my baby away. The story would have been in my head that if he wasn't born in a hospital, he'd be dead. and he'd be on formula today. Do you know what I mean? And because we had it there, and so I'm, you know, I know that the people in the comments can be like, that's one in a million, or that's one in this, and that's one in that. Well, I'm just telling you my story. Like,
well, I think it just goes like, you make the best decision you can with the information with your spouse, and you guys have these conversations, right? Like, but you educate yourself on all these different things.
But that's why I think that like the birthing class that I took was like, it was the best thing that I think we did as a family, because it opened my eyes. Because the other thing that they talk a lot about is like, us men, like as protectors, it's like in our DNA to want to do that. That's why so many dads are the ones that tend to struggle with the idea of what they've always just believed to be a riskier option, right? Like if you don't learn and do the education, like if you were to go and ask 100 random men, what's more dangerous, having a baby at home or having it in a hospital, you know, 98% of them would say obviously at home. But like, if you really take the time, because again, this was 7 weeks, 3 hours, packed with, like, she was explaining stuff the entire time.
Was it a hypnobirthing class? That's the one we took. What was yours called?
It didn't like have a name. It was just like the, it was done by the doulas that we worked with.
And so you'd already decided you were home birthing.
Oh yeah. 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 Okay. So my wife knew she wanted to do a home birth, not so much for a lot of the reasons of like taking the baby out of the hospital, that stuff makes so much sense, but just because she wanted to be where she was most comfortable.
Yeah.
And that always felt to her like it was at home. And the other reason that I was so excited to have this conversation with you and really talk about this is I completely agree. This is a super personal decision. It's the mom's decision and dad's there to support. And
yeah,
I want to make sure that everyone knows that, like, I'm super excited because your story is, you know, pretty similar to ours and you don't hear a lot of that. But the other thing that like really, really impacted me the other day, and I saw, do you know Emily Stanwyck?
Let me look. The name sounds crazy familiar.
She's a doula out of like here. So I live right next to New Braunfels. Lindsay from BirthFit is actually Ariel's chiropractor.
She looks like a doula. What a cool looking lady. That's your doula?
No, that's not our doula. She's just a doula here in the area in like the small like chiropractic home birth like community here, which is, you know, small enough that you kind of know everyone involved. But she just said something the other day that really stuck out at me, that like, it seems to be that most times if there's like a discrepancy between like the wife feeling like being called to a home birth or wanting to do that and a husband that is just very concerned with the safety of it, more times than not, like, and I don't know if this is the right word, but like the wife will kind of like stoop down to like the fear of the husband versus the husband like being able to like come up to like what she wants to do. And so she was calling for like more men that are, you know, home birth fathers to like share their stories and share the fact that like, you know, this stuff is okay. And if you do the education, it's safe. So that's another kind of reason that I was fired up to talk to you about this, because I've never had maybe the opportunity to like share some of this stuff. Or, I mean, I know I can always do it on my own, but it felt really cool to do it with someone that was so passionate about the experience, felt so good about it. Because for me, like, dude, when we were sitting in the bedroom and my son came out, like at the foot of our bed, like you said, like, I can't imagine it had been any differently. And the fact that like our doulas like took care of the house and warmed up a meal for us and then just like left us there to like,
yeah, they just leave you.
They just leave you.
Mine didn't do that. I was cleaning up all the shit, I think.
Oh, dude. They, like, ours were great. They put the load of laundry in. And anyway, like I can't imagine that experience have been any different for us. Again, for us. But
how old's your wife?
My wife is 31 now. So 31, okay. I'm 33. Yeah.
My wife is a very settled human being. And that's another thing, like, She's just very settled. So like my wife did not leave the house for 3 months after having the twins. Not once. The first time she came up is I was like, hey, I bought a minivan. Do you want to see it? She opened the front door and looked. She's like, oh, thank you. And went back inside the house. And I think, I just see all of these younger women also feeling like they need to get up and get going. I don't know what that is, but maybe it was because my wife had the babies at home, but she was settled. Like she just settled in, got a leather recliner on sale, a yellow one. And You know what I mean? Just.
And I just want to, you know, make my position on this, right? Like you guys are both over here, right? And we had an incredible experience on the opposite side, right? So like, you only know your experience. So like Gabe's experience was like magical, right? He loved everything about it. My experience, we had a little bit of trauma and stuff. We had to handle it. But like the second time around, for example, or the plan didn't go as planned. But it was still an incredible experience, dude. It was life-changing. And it was just, I just want to make sure that like, I think each family just needs, Gabe, I think you bring up a good point. Like as a man, you know, listening to your wife and like what they want to do, like you should be supportive of that. And my wife was
very clear. Not your family and friends.
Yes.
And not your family and friends.
Oh, yeah. Because we had a good amount of like,
they're terrified of home birth. The family's terrified. I'd be terrified if my kids wanted to do
it. For sure.
Fuck you. No, go to the hospital. Yeah. The family's terrified.
Yeah.
You guys.
And
Ashley
was really adamant on what she wanted. Right. And so for us, it wasn't another option. So like, I guess like, you know, again, just kind of going full circle on it. I think what's important is obviously communicating. And it's like, you got to communicate with your spouse. You got to figure out what's important to them. And if it's really important to them, you got to do what you got to do. Like, that's it. If it was the other way around for Ashley,
what about
this,
Jason, though? What about this? Let me put this out there. This creature, this with the vagina and the titties, it makes babies and it births them. And this is a tremendous opportunity for that creature to transform, to have an experience that's unique to what, and I'm going to spin a narrative on it, but what's unique to their life and their transformation to going to that next level of the cliche would be turning from a caterpillar to a butterfly. I don't think that people who don't have kids turn into butterflies. That might piss some people off, whatever. I'm not saying it's a good thing or bad thing, but I just don't think it happens. And by the way, I also don't think that all people who have kids turn into butterflies either, but you have an opportunity to go through a transformation. I suspect that a woman needs to be in a teepee with her husband and birthing a baby out onto a dirt floor in order to experience herself to her fullest capacity.
That's your position.
I think it's a missed opportunity for a woman to not do that. It's like, hey man, like you are going to grow this thing inside of you and you're going to put it out. And the experience that you are going to have is going to transform you. And you have an opportunity for this incredible transformation. And if you really take it and go out into your backyard with your husband and, you know, and do it. Fucking you're gonna get something out of it that someone who has it in a hospital is not gonna get out of it.
Maybe someone out there is gonna get, like, I mean, just playing out, like, for example, it's been transformative in my life to have kids.
Of course.
All of us. I think, you know, I guess the point is like, I think what you're trying to say, I mean, well, you're more on this side, but like I'm saying, like, I think having kids is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I think that it's made me a better man.
The actual process of going through the pain and just doing that thing and that solo journey. It's like a fucked up acid trip, but you get to do it as a woman. And like, you're like, I think there's, I don't know what the word is, but an empowerment or something. Hey dude, let me draw a parallel to it. It's like these fucking guys who work at Apple who are 40 years old, who never in their life have run a full sprint as 400 meters as far as they can. And you see them everywhere, especially in our hood, right? And you're like, I don't even know if you're a man. You're not even presenting as a man creature.
You add to one of our men's club workouts. You'll see them.
How about veal? You know, veal is like they take, I think what I heard is they take a baby cow and they hold it in place. And do you know what veal is?
Yeah, I know what veal is.
And they don't let the cow put down its feet because they don't want it to get any muscle and they want it to be a certain kind of meat. And so it never gets to turn into a fucking cow. Or it's like a lion in a cage at a zoo. Is that really a lion? Because he's not doing any lion shit. And so I suspect that if you want to be a full woman, you have to fucking go out in the backyard and squat one out, solo trip. Your husband's just there with a stick, making sure like a mountain lion doesn't get her. And then you get the journey. Telling you. I'm telling you, dude. I know it might seem offensive to some people, but please no one take offense to it. But like, you're a fucking bad bitch and you can do something. And like, you might as well take this fucking journey and like take a shot at it.
Oh man. Best guess to date. Savannah, a question I wanted to ask you.
I was struggling whether I was going to be unapologetically myself or not today. And I never use that word, but I was debating it like on my podcast this morning. I'm like, I don't know. Because sometimes it's just I'll just be like, you're a shitty parent if you ever put a mask on your kid. And like, people are like, you're a dick. And I'm like, God, like, I didn't really mean that, but I said it, but I didn't really mean it, but.
Oh man,
I mean that about girls. Like, girls, you gotta go bird. If you have a chance and you want to get the whole girl experience, listen. If you want to be a man, go hang out on Saturdays with Jason, and then ask him if you can go with Tim Kennedy and get beat up. But if you want to be a girl, get some baby batter in you and fucking birth the baby in the backyard with your husband holding a stick, wearing a loincloth.
This time around, I'm going to hold a stick and wear a loincloth. Yeah. How much of this, like the fact that you guys were open to making that switch, because I think the most interesting part of your story was the fact that you were so set on doing things one way and ended up doing the other. And, you know, another thing that you said on the podcast was the fact that like you regret not have, or maybe regret isn't the word you use, but that had you had them sooner, you wouldn't have regretted having kids sooner, right? Like, but how much of the time and wisdom to get to, you know, having your first kid at 39 and 40 played into maybe the open-mindedness and the way that you're even raising your kids now versus if you had done it, you know, in your 20s?
I may have done it the same way, but I would have done it because it was trendy and I was trying to fulfill some sort of, I would have been a horrible shit. I'm, even though my 7-year-old just beat me at tennis yesterday, we played for an hour nonstop and I tried to make him cry and fucking mash him. He fucking beat me and it was the best moment. It was probably top 10 best days of my life yesterday. I walked off the court and I was to walk straight to my mom. Like, this has got to be top 10 best days of my life. I just played an hour of tennis with my 7-year-old. I just would not have been that parent. My 30s were for grinding, man. And I had a different kind of temperament. And I didn't have values. Maybe my kids have given me values, but I didn't have values. I didn't have morals. I mean, I had them. I just didn't know what they were. I wasn't conscious of them. They were given to me. I didn't choose them. And I just think maybe I would have had more babies, but like everything is perfect. Like for me, I'm kind of a late bloomer. I was always been a little bit of a late bloomer. And for me, this is like the perfect speed. Yeah. If my wife was like, hey, we can have more kids. If you want more kids, we can have more kids. I would have more kids. But she's like, we're done. I'm like, come on, a little few more. And she's like, dude, we just be thankful. Shut the fuck up. I'm like, all right, cool. Wife never says no. There's two things she said no about. No arm wrestling table in the living room. And no more letting loads fly. Like no more baby. No. So I didn't get fixed though. I don't believe in that either. I ain't snipping that thing. There's no fucking way I'm snipping that thing. That's crazy town. Did you snip yours, Jason?
Yeah.
Oh, did it change? You
know, well, I had like a whole issue. I had like a whole thing. So that's okay. A whole complicated situation.
Listen, you deserve some issues. Look at you. You're fucking four men in one body.
Oh gosh.
I'm one third of a man. You got my fucking two thirds.
Hey, when are you starting jiu-jitsu?
Oh, dude, I can't.
That's what? What?
Hey, do you know what's crazy too, Jason? I had Andrew, you would love this guest. Andrew, you know him too. Andrew Gargoza. He's the producer for the technician and producer for the Mark Bell podcast. You know the guy who sits?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, of course.
I had him on the show and he's like, dude, I had the worst back in the world and I did jiu-jitsu and it went away. I'm like, oh, fuck me. Don't tell me that. He goes, why? I'm like, I'm looking for any excuse I can not to do it.
No, yeah. Andrew, yeah. He put up his, he did like, I think he's been doing it a year now and it's been huge for him. It's changed
huge.
His life.
Yeah, huge. Changed his life. Yeah, huge.
Yeah, so why can't you do jiu-jitsu? Your kids are in jiu-jitsu.
I always have this subtle chronic pain, or at least I have this story that I'm always telling myself. You know what I mean? Like, I'm always like I'm going to get up out of this chair and I'm going to be like stiff and shit and like be moving around weird. And so here's the thing. I got injured really bad one time, and I had the twins in Avi, and it was from, I was doing some deadlift workout and my back went out, and basically I was stuck in bed and I had to crawl and pee in the shower, and it was like 3 days of that. And after that, I'm like, okay, every workout you do now, you're taking the women's weights and then you're cutting them in half. And that's what you're going to do. And I haven't been injured since. And I was getting injured about twice a year, but this has been going on since I've been like 18. So now I have my longest run. I'm probably 5 years without an injury. So I don't want to be put into a, I don't want to be put into a situation where I get injured, I guess. I'm maybe just scared.
Yeah.
But I do like roll. I wrestle with my kids every day. And when the jiu-jitsu instructor's at the house, like I grab him and shit, and he's a brown belt. You've rolled with him before, Nico. I don't know Nico's last name. Big guy.
Yeah.
But
you're preaching to the choir on that one. Like I've had to check myself. I know Gabe has too. Like for me, like fitness should be enhancing my life. So like if I'm training too hard where I can't function and play with my kids, like that's a big problem for me.
But I haven't been hurt doing jiu-jitsu. I'm just scared.
Yeah, we'll get
you there. But I like the thought of it. I love wrestling. I wrestled in high school 1 year. I used to wrestle with my sister all the time. I wrestle with my boys.
Gabe.
Dude, I'm still taking it all in from the home birthing stuff. You'll appreciate this though, Savon. Liz, who's our producer on the podcast, sent me a message, said, I actually met him once with Jason and his kids were perfectly behaved and on skateboards. So checks out.
Dude, and here's the thing, dude. My kids are not perfect. Like at home, it's fucking chaos, dude. Dude's just flying through the air, Superman punches, but you take them out. It's fucking hello, sir. No, sir. Yes, please. No, please. I could have them out for hours. Like they fucking know the rules. And if they don't, then we don't go out. So like they've learned to, but here at home, the rules are totally different. I got a whole jiu-jitsu room. I got a backyard. If you cross the rules, we got the 100 burpees area. You know what I mean? I'll tell you one more thing too. I've told the story a bunch, but this is an important one. When you have three boys, you can do shit to them that you cannot do if you have one girl. Or if you have one boy, you can borderline fucking abuse them. And by that, I mean, I had my three boys in the shower. They're showering and they start pushing each other. And there's a rule, no pushing in the shower. So I turn the water off, dry them off, throw them fucking pair of boxers each, take them to the garage, have them do 100 burpees. You do that to fucking one kid, you can break his fucking heart and wreck him, right? But you got three boys and all of a sudden they're like, fuck you, it's us against you. And so you can't, there are nuances to what you can and can't do. But these parents who are making excuses like, hey, I'm sitting in a waiting room at the fucking DMV for 2 hours and I have to give my kid an iPad and a phone. No, you don't. No, you don't. You bring a fucking $12 box of crayons that they have in Amazon that have paper, and that's the only thing your kid knows, and you hand it to him and he'll draw every time, all the time. And that's what my kids do.
Well, now your kids are even a little bit older, so you've been able to test that. I am curious, so on the boys thing.
Yeah.
You think so like 5 years ago or whatever, like, well, are you going to get them into more like baseball, football, like those type of things? Are you anti that? Or are you?
No, I'm not anti that at all. So how we got on this journey is they were requiring masks for everything in my area. And so tennis didn't require masks. I think tennis was stupid, but now I love it. I thought tennis, golf, and baseball are Italy. Well, we do play baseball, but we don't play. I throw them pitches in the garage regularly and I have them swing both right and left. That's another thing. Make your kid ambidextrous. Someone wrote, what are you, fucking Hitler, on my Instagram? It's like, dude, you just do things for your kids that you wish your parents would have done for you. How cool would it be if you could do everything with both your hands? And how good is it for your brain? And so I'm not against those things, and it probably would be good to do those things. Because obviously my kids do skateboarding, jiu-jitsu, and tennis. Those are all individual sports. We just haven't done it. We got into those routines because those three things didn't require masks during, or we could find communities that would teach our kids those things. Also, another time, don't waste your time with programs that are babysitting your kids. Don't put your kid into a tennis program unless there's 10 Japanese kids in it with fucking dragon moms or whatever those things are called. You want to be around. That hour needs to be like tedious, working on the stroke, covering the mouth. It needs to be disciplined. They'll have all the time afterwards to have fun with the kids, and you can play with them and they can fuck around. Same with jiu-jitsu. Soon as your kids start slowing down, give the academy another 6 months and then switch them. As soon as like you see that they're not evolving. Same with skateboarding. Switch their teacher. Do not, these are not places. This is your kid's fucking life and your fucking money. Do not fuck around with people who don't have the same belief system. You, here's the litmus test. If you don't take your kid to class, you should feel, you should be worried about what the teacher is going to say to you. That's how it is in the jiu-jitsu academy and the tennis. If you miss a class, you want it to like, fuck, what, I wonder what the teacher thinks of me today if I'm shitty parenting. You're in a competition with the teachers. If you don't feel that, take them out. Switch to a different one. That's like the good litmus test. You want the skateboarding teacher to be like, hey, I haven't seen you in a week. Come, you need to be here. You want the you want it so like anytime you miss a class, you feel obligated to call the instructor. Hey, sorry, my kid's not going to be there. You want there to be some sort of buy-in. You want it to where the teacher's giving you assignments for your kid to do that you're like falling behind on. You don't want to be the one being like, hey, how come they're not teaching my kid this? And you're like constantly like, so because it's your time and your money and your kid's time. Don't waste your kid's time. And hey, so that being said, I take my kids to striking and jiu-jitsu minimum 5 days a week, right? But if three of the days they're not learning something in class and they're just having fun and the other 2 days they're learning, it's a win. Every day is not a learning day. There's some days that like one of my kids is one of the best kids in his class. And because of that, there's been like 6 months of him helping other kids more than he's helping. His growth has slowed. That's okay. He's still getting the discipline. He's still going. He's still getting the reps in. So there's, unfortunately, I do see a lot of parents also like I'll take my kids to skateboard lessons and they won't learn a new trick. And the other parents are like, who are like maybe in the skate lesson with me will be like, hey, the kids didn't learn a trick today. I'm like, dude, but they hung out with this guy, Luke, who's an amazing skateboarding teacher who said hi to people and they were bonding with other kids. And like, there's always my kid yesterday, Avi stood in front of YouTube trying to learn how to shuffle cards and make it do a bridge. He really wants to learn how to do a bridge and he didn't get it after an hour. And he's bummed. I'm like, but dude, you got an hour in the bank of trying. Like, so.
Gabe, I think how much of it do you think is like now? Do you pay attention to all of your actions in front of your kids? Because I know I do. I'm hyper focused on all of my actions in front of my kids and the way I treat people, the way I talk to people, the way I do things. Because they pick up on it, man. They pick up on it fast, and they're a lot smarter. I think we give them credit for. And do you feel that same way? Because I know I do strongly.
I feel that way, but like I have some like I have serious potty mouth.
Mm. Well, I can recognize that. And how many F bombs you think you feel?
I have a serious potty mouth, and my kids, although they don't do it in public around our house, it is wild. It is the wild west of dialogue. And there's a few words that they're just absolutely not allowed to say. they're watching everything. They're watching everything. The thing is, and probably the same as you too, I'm just a nice person. So I just do nice things. I mean, I pull into a parking spot and someone else wants it. Like, I don't give a fuck. I go to a different parking spot. Like, I'm just cruising my life and getting what I want out of life. And yeah, they're watching everything. I'm never going to get the chance to see John Wick for another 10 years. Cause I would never have that plane in my house because I don't want my kids seeing it.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So in that regard, yeah, I guess I am, but I'm just doing me, but I'm not, I don't know. I don't have any, I'm old and I don't have any, I'm old and I'm generous and I'm conscious of it, but I don't have anything that I don't feel like there's anything I have to hide from them also. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I have a kind of my last thing I'll ask Gabe. It's like, we talk about this idea of train, protect, provide. And for me, it's really evolved over the years. And I used to train all the time to be the fittest.
Say that again. I want to write that down so I can see it. Train,
Protect, provide.
Okay.
Yep. So for many years, right, I trained so that I could win the CrossFit Games. That's what I was. That was my goal. And you
that was before kids.
When I first was introduced to CrossFit, this was before I had kids. I was just training to be the fittest on earth. I had kids really, pretty early. And I was still competing professionally, but now that's kind of evolved for me where I train so I could protect this idea of run, jump, climb, lift, sprint if needed. You remember that video of like the shopping cart where there was like a baby in the shopping cart and the person had to go run after it? That's what I think about when I think about protect. It's not necessarily like fist fighting and things like that. Like, sure, I do a lot of grappling and whatnot, but that's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like being able to run if I needed to and do those type of things. That's why I train. And I also do it so I could provide. And I think the provide piece is really unique with you, which is, I'm curious your take on this. When I think about what provide means, it means experiences. It means that I always want to be able to say yes. If my kids want to go do anything, I train so I could provide that experience. It's really important to me, like at my soul. I never want to say no because I'm physically incapable or too tired. Or in some cases, like you said, too beat up. Like if my hands are all ripped up because I was doing too many pull-ups and I can't throw the baseball at my son, like that's going to bother me. I can't let that happen. So I train to protect and provide. I'm curious what that means to you.
It's interesting. The protect thing for me also, I'm just really aware when I'm with my kids. I would never be looking at I love my phone. I love my iPhone. Coolest thing, one of the coolest material things in my life. I would never look at my phone as I'm crossing the street. If I'm always looking around when I'm just always paying attention. For me, it's to be completely aware of my surroundings. It's if someone cuts me off, not to flip them off and not put my kids in danger. Not even if my kids aren't in the car, not to put myself in danger. I need to come home, to always have my ego in check, not to be a coward or a pussy, but to always have my ego in check so that I'm not putting myself in any danger so that I can't come home and keep being the longest. So for me, protecting is mostly, and I'm, like I said, I'm 52 years old and I'm getting older and I'm slowing down from, so my protect is mostly just to be aware and keep my kids safe and to give them the tools to also be, to protect themselves. But of course, I want to be able to play tennis and frisbee and run and bike, and I do all that shit with them, like as much as I can. And I want to be able to, that's not why I train, but like, so the other night, I did just a stupid workout. I did, I was on the assault bike. I did, 10 calories on the assault bike, 10 presses with 25 pound dumbbells, 10 rounds, right? It was in the middle of the day. And then the nighttime came around and it was like 10 o'clock at night and everyone had gone to bed. And I was like, hey, that's not going to cut it. Like you were fucking around watching TV and shit. So then I went back in the garage and I did 10 burpees, 10 deadlifts with 135, 10 rounds I felt like I was going to fucking die. And if I use my kids for motivation for that. Right. So that's important to me. And the provide for me, it's really monetarily at this point too. It's like, yeah, it's just monetarily. I'm not a vacation person. Like I don't think like my life, I don't compartmentalize my life. So it's not about like taking them to Hawaii, but it's about, for me, the big thing is I would like to leave them homes. I would like to leave them real estate when I die by any means necessary. And I'd like to be able to pay for them to get any instruction they want. So I spend a lot of my money on instruction. A ton of money on private instruction. But also the reason why I like that is I'm paying people who are like, one of the people I play is a professional fighter. The other one's dedicated their life to jiu-jitsu. The other one's a local kid who has the most insane skateboard business. The other one's a tennis instructor. So when I'm paying that money to local instructors, it also makes me feel good. I'm like, these are people who are chasing their passions. So, and by the way, any parents who are out there, if you like an instructor, it's your duty to get other kids to come to that instructor. If you truly love your kids and your instructor, you will do anything you can to bring more clients. You won't shut the fuck up about those programs because you want that. You want to see your instructors driving brand new cars, having girlfriends, having wives. Like you want to see them succeed. Like you have to. You want them to be rich. You want them to be able to buy a house. Like that's who you want. You want to turn them into Serena Williams tennis coach. And so for me right now, provide is mostly money. I see your take on it too. And it's super valid. Yeah.
Yeah. And we talk about the money side too, for sure. Yeah. Like obviously we want to provide as well. Like Gabe and I, we talk about that a little time. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad I do the podcast every single day. I absolutely love it. It keeps me sharp. I love the fact that I have the Matuthian. I didn't do any of those things for money. I didn't purchase my first house for money, but because I've kept my head down and just working in the same direction, those things have brought in money.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've You've been all in on it. You told me like 5 years ago, you're like, bro, I'm doing the podcast. Or maybe not five. It was like 3 years ago.
Yeah, probably.
You're like, I'm all in.
Yeah.
Gabe, you got anything for Savon before we close it out?
Well, I just always like to close out with asking for a book rec. I feel like I get the best book recs from guests on the podcast. If I get one rec, I usually order it. I order it right on the show, and I'm already getting toothpaste this episode. This is going to be a pricey one.
Dude, order me one too, bro. So ship it to my house.
I'll send you toothpaste.
No. We want to buy the toothpaste. We want to support
tooth powder. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
This book I recommended to someone yesterday. Ready? Do you ever read fiction?
Yeah.
Okay, because I never read fiction, but I read this fiction. It's called Stranger in a Strange Land. And I highly recommend the audiobook. The audiobook's amazing. And this guy's name is Robert Heinlein, and he's contemporaries with Hitchcock, Ray Bradbury, and who's the Scientology guy? L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah.
I think all those guys were science fiction writers in our area where we live. And they all lived in this area and they were all science fiction writers at the same time. But this guy wrote this book, Stranger in a Strange Land. And it says it's science fiction, but I just read it as religion. I couldn't even fucking believe the things this guy was proposing. I mean, it's cool. It's really, really cool.
Awesome. Dude.
I love that. Check that.
Minor correction though, where you guys live. I'm in the great state of Texas. So.
Oh, you're not really? You're not in San Jose right now?
No. I mean,
no wonder you got the flag. No wonder you got the they would come get me and Jason if we had that up.
Dude, yeah, he's in the great state of Texas. We're in the great state of California. Right. But yeah, Gabe, I mean that's I like talking to Savon. He's a little he's always a little
anytime. Savon,
you always say you always say what's on your mind, man. And ever since we first met, I mean, shit, I remember you with your camera going around the CrossFit Games, and it's been cool to see your journey. And I love watching the podcast and its success. I really do. Love seeing friends make money, be successful, and do what they love. And you're a really good example of that, going from your pivot from CrossFit to starting the podcast. And like, basically you're like, dude, I got no plan B. I remember I talked to you when the podcast was like new. You're like, bro, I got no plan B. And it's been cool to watch you dedicate yourself to that, stay super consistent with it, and build something special with an audience that really, you know, admires you. So I just want to give you kudos for saying you're going to do something and then doing it.
Thank you. Let me say one thing, nice thing about you too.
Oh, thanks.
Even though I have tons. Even like when my car broke down at your house and you offered me your car, very nice car with my old pile of shit. But listen, when I was filming, I started filming CrossFit and 2008, 2009, I was filming the games in 2010. And Jason came up to me at one point and he was the first athlete to ever crack the code on this. And since then, it seems like so many other athletes haven't cracked the code on this. And Travis Bajan said something to me very similar. He said, hey, when you're arm wrestling, there's three people there. They're the guys you're going against. And then there's the referee and you got to be both of them. But Jason said it different. He said, hey man, if you're going to compete at this level, there's the competition and there's the media, and you can't fucking basically be separating the two. It's like one, you got to figure the whole fucking package out. If you spend your time fighting the media, you can't, it's just assimilate it. It's one event. You're going to come here. You're going to do the event. You're going to deal with the media. And because of that, you cracked the code on that and you got shitloads of good media time and everyone loved working with you. And you just made it as part of your journey. Like you would be on the field dying and you'd still talk to us, or you'd walk off and you'd lean on us if you needed an arm. And you were just always, and you consciously made that decision at some point. I think in like 2009, you figured it out, like, hey, I can go with this or fight it. And you went with it. And I'm not doing that to like say that everyone should do that, but I do think everyone should do that. You can make the conscious decision to just be like, okay, I'm just going to go with this flow. And I appreciate you for that. It's always been a blast working with you. And I think that's why, you've had so much progress in everything you do. Cause you've learned how to assimilate. You're not arguing with reality. Hey, they're going to be here. Do you want them to be part of your team or against you? And it's like, you crack the code.
Hey, did you finish the Open, by the way?
No.
Okay. No.
I did the first workout. I did the second workout. I didn't turn in my, score. I only got four rounds, but then, I saw those 95 pound thrusters. I'm like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. All good. Yeah. Well, dude,
I thought it was great. I thought the Open was great. I love the workout.
Yeah, it was definitely more conducive to being able to do it in the gym for sure. So I thought they did a good job with that 100%. And the attendance was up. It looked good. I mean, yeah. We're not, yeah, I'm not like as deeply involved in the sports side, but I thought overall it looked really good. Gabe, you got anything else?
No, man. Savannah, I appreciate your time, man. This was one of my favorite episodes. So check out the book, check out the tooth powder, and I'm fired up, man. I'm fired up. I'm going to be doing the home birth thing here in like 3 weeks.
And if anyone has questions about home birth, go to Lindsay Cantu. Yes. Her and her husband are CrossFitters. Lance is friends with all of us here. And I think we can all vouch for him and check out her program, BirthFit. Great. Whether you want to get pregnant, you're pregnant, or you've had a baby, she's an amazing resource, BirthFit.
Awesome people. Yeah.
Yeah. Savannah, I mean, look, from the inside and from the outside, like you have opinions on things and you definitely share them. However, when it comes to the kids, from everything that I've seen in person and just around, you back up what you're talking about with action. I think that's really important. And you, very similar to you and I, we connect very deeply on this, that like, we get no second chances on being a parent. And I really, really care about looking back and be like, I did the best I could every single day to level up as a parent because I only had one shot. I think you and I, we like so aligned deeply on that, that like, and Gabe, that like that's what I think about on a regular basis is like, and so talking to guys like you, it just keeps me inspired to keep doing what we're doing. So I appreciate you, brother. And we'll make sure to put all your different podcasts, all the different show notes, where we can find you at.
Matuthian. Save you. Change your life, Matuthian.
Matuthian.